The following program has been pre-recorded. The views expressed by the participants are not necessarily those of WHFR Radio or Henry Ford College. Welcome to We Are Not Alone. We're local investigators, as well as world-renowned scientists and ufologists, share their latest evidence in support of the UAP reality. I'm David Twitchell, and for the next hour, we'll be exploring the mysteries of the UFO, UAP, and abduction phenomenon.
And our guest today is Kathleen Martin. Kathleen is a researcher, author, on-camera expert, and conference presenter. She is widely considered one of the leading UFO contact researchers of our time. Since 1990, she has researched the perplexing nature of UFOs, or UAPs, I should say, and non-human entities associated with highly advanced aerial vehicles via her own groundbreaking research, investigations, and experimentation. Her research has extended to archival collections and the U.S. government's involvement in the investigations of UFOs and its major studies. She earned a BA degree in social services and was employed as an educator and education services coordinator while attending graduate school. Her interest in UAPs and contact with began in 1961 when her aunt and uncle, Betty and Barney Hill, had a close encounter and subsequent abduction in New Hampshire's White Mountains. She spent 15 years in painstaking investigation of the Hill abduction case and continues to seek the scientific analysis of the compelling evidence. She has worked on three comprehensive studies on nearly 5,000 experiencers, two of which she initiated and saw to the end, and has six professionally published books, three of which were in collaboration with the late nuclear physicist Stanton T. Friedman. Her latest book is Forbidden Knowledge, A Personal Journey from Alien Abduction to Spiritual Transformation. She was a guest on this show back in February of 2020, and I'm pleased to welcome her back today. Hello, Kathleen.
Hello. Great to be with you again.
Well, thank you for rejoining us for a second time. It's always good to have you. It's always good to see you.
Nice to see you, too.
Yeah, you're seeing me for the first time. Last time was on the radio and you couldn't see me.
That's correct, yes.
I was hiding. I've mentioned before we went on air that this was a local TV show at one point, We Are Not Alone. Mm-hmm. And I always joked that I finally realized I had the face for radio, so I moved on over to WHFR. Mm-hmm. So, what have you been up to since we last spoke?
Oh my gosh, it's been a couple of years, so I'm not sure if I had written Extraterrestrial Contact, What to Do When You've Been Abducted. That was a MUFON publication. Mm-hmm. And then the new one is Forbidden Knowledge, A Personal Journey from Alien Abduction to Spiritual Transformation. And I spent a great deal of my free time during the COVID pandemic writing that book.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been, unfortunately, we could not have live conferences. I did do only two live conferences last year. This year I have six live conferences and had a couple that were not live. But so things are looking up. I'm very excited about this. Oh, I'm going to be in Roswell for the UFO festival over July 4th weekend. And then the following weekend is the Mutual UFO Networks Symposium, International Symposium in Denver, and I will be speaking there as well.
Yes, looking forward to that. And so, first of all, tell us about your book, Forbidden Knowledge. What all is included?
Well, I felt that it was time for me to talk about myself. Mm-hmm. And to write a book about my personal history, experiences, research, investigations, my introduction to some information that had not been made publicly available. It still hasn't been, but I have the correspondence files between Wilbert Smith, who was the Canadian government's UFO desk director, director of Project Magnet and Project Second Story. And also, he was a brilliant radio engineer with many patents, and also Rear Admiral Herbert Knowles, who had retired from the Navy. And he and Wilbert Smith and members of the federal government mm-hmm. and military were working together to determine whether messages received by a woman in Maine, allegedly from extraterrestrials, could be verified. And for a very long time, I thought that that whole topic was taboo. I wanted nothing to do with it. I was sort of embarrassed. And for 10 years, I hid it away in my locked file cabinet. But then wrote...
Stanton Friedman's gray basket, huh?
Yes, absolutely. So eventually, we moved along in our understanding of contact. And I pulled those files out and I reread them. They came from Admiral Knowles' granddaughter. She brought them to me at a conference in New Hampshire. And that's how I acquired them. And she gave me permission to write about them. In fact, she encouraged me to, but I found it too embarrassing at first. And so it took me many years to do that.
Why did you find it embarrassing?
Because they were channeled messages.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry, you probably told me, what is this woman's name?
Her name was Frances Swan.
Okay.
And she lived in the same town as Admiral Knowles. And her communications began in early 1954.
Mm-hmm.
And she wrote all of the information that she was receiving. It wasn't directly channeled through her vocal cords, at least in the beginning. It was more of a mediumistic sort of communication where she would receive the messages that she could hear in her head and would write them down as quickly as possible. She took a thick packet of information to Admiral Knowles, and when he read the information in the packet, he said that the level of scientific knowledge was beyond anything that Frances Swan could understand and beyond her level of education. So he was impressed by the scientific information. He sent that information off to Dwight Eisenhower, who was president of the United States at that time. He also gave a copy to Margaret Chase Smith, who was the U.S. senator from the state of Maine. And so I wrote in Forbidden Knowledge about all of the correspondence files, the government's interest in this. I had received FBI files indicating that the federal government did have an interest in this. So everything is in Forbidden Knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
I was just going to ask, what year was it confirmed that the government had a interest in the UAP phenomenon?
Well, I didn't know until I received the information, and I think it was probably in the late, maybe 2008, 2009, something like that. But I'm not positive about that, the date of that.
But nothing to indicate that they were interested in it back in the 70s, 80s, 90s.
That they were interested in what?
Interested in the UAP phenomenon back in the 80s and 90s.
Well, no, I don't have any files indicating that they were interested in the UAP phenomena back in the 80s and 90s. The only thing that we had is that in Stanton's research, he discovered a file that had a statement regarding Project Blue Book, and that the Blue Book files would be handled in the method that they, the prescribed method, which meant no longer would there be Project Blue Book, but those important files that could affect national security were being handled secretly mm-hmm. by the Air Force.
Mm-hmm.
So, we have that information, but I did enjoy reading all of those letters and the messages received by Francis Swan. There was some information there that I thought was important. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, when I was speaking at the MUFON International Symposium in Orlando, Florida in 2016, there was a man who went to the conference, and his name is Kevin Briggs. Now, Kevin lives in the United States now. He became a citizen, he and his wife. They live in Florida, and they came originally from the UK. He grew up there, and he grew up and became a police officer, and his wife taught at a college there. Mm-hmm. And so I finally had the opportunity to meet both of them at a later date and was impressed by the fact that they were very grounded. Kevin met with Denise Stoner, who was running the experiencer groups at the symposium, and Dr. Melanie Barton Bragg, who is on our directory of psychotherapists who work with experiencers, was there as well and met Kevin. And so we were invited to go out to lunch with Kevin, and we did a few times. And the conversation finally turned to my house. Now, he remembered being a young boy and having these very two tall people. They were taller than humans. They didn't look precisely like humans, but fairly similar, materialize in his bathroom.
Oh.
And he was in the bath, and he was frightened to death. He didn't dare to get out. And his mother finally went in to see what was wrong, and So they dematerialized at that point, and he got out of the bathtub. But at a later date, one of them, the male of the two, they male and female, the male came back as a conscious orb and stayed with Kevin for a week and taught him how to astral travel, which was great fun when he was a child because he could visit relatives whenever he wanted to. And so he enjoyed that. When he was the paper boy, and he was a teenager at that point, one morning he was out on his paper route and he saw a craft hovering over the park that he was pedaling by. And he then experienced a period of missing time. And he always had questions about that. He didn't know what had happened. So I did hypnosis with him, and he was taken to Kraft. And this was the first time he met these extraterrestrials who called themselves the Council of Eight. And one of or two of those members were the ones who had materialized in his bathroom when he was a boy. So after the hypnosis, we decided to form an investigative team because Kevin began to develop the ability to communicate with these extraterrestrials. That's what they call themselves anyway. And so we took our equipment that we use in MUFON investigations, and, you know, for example, a laser thermometer and other equipment to attempt to collect scientific data indicating whether or not this was real. And so we did that. We were able to find that the area of the room at Kevin's home, we met, let me back up, we met once a month for 2 years. And now we meet periodically, generally two or three times a year. And we were permitted to ask whatever questions we wanted to ask. But backing up to the beginning of these meetings, when we had all of our equipment there, we were able to measure a significant change in the area of the room where these ETs were standing. Now, could we see them? No, for the most part, we couldn't. Sometimes there was a little shimmering. Sometimes there was, they were sort of translucent rather than being transparent, but just a little bit of shadowy, not something that really stood out for us.
Do you have that video of that incident?
We did not bring a video. I do have the audio. I was in charge of the audio tape.
Okay. Not necessarily bring it here, but were you able to videotape it then?
No, we couldn't.
Oh, I see.
But we didn't have a camera. We didn't have a video camera.
Oh, I see.
It didn't, that was not something that we took to the meetings.
Okay.
We took our tri-field meter, our laser thermometer, that sort of thing.
What was the reason that you couldn't have a camera?
Well, we didn't think of it. That's why. Okay. I'm not a photographer. I don't do a lot of photography. I guess Denise didn't think of it. Melanie didn't think of it. Our group expanded to doubled in size a year later. And we had two skeptics in the group and others, but no one tried to video what it was.
Is it possible that whomever, whatever was telling you subconsciously, don't videotape this?
Well, we didn't even have the equipment to videotape it. So,
Right. What I'm saying is it possible that they were telling you beforehand, don't bring any video equipment?
Well, I suppose anything is possible. Some subliminal message? I don't know about that. What I can tell you is that we experienced a very strong electrical tingling sensation in our bodies in their presence.
Okay.
Seven of them told us that they were fifth or sixth dimensionals. There was one ninth dimensional who gave us very strong tingling. And also, when the fifth and sixth dimensionals came into the room, we were able to measure, it was about a 5.5 degree increase in temperature, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then when the ninth dimensional came, it was about 6.5 degrees or higher. So there was a definite temperature increase. We took the reading from another part of the room nearby. We took a reading before this happened, and we took a reading in that specific part of the room where they were standing when they came in to introduce themselves to us.
Mm-hmm.
So we had that. We had all of us, without expecting it, felt that very strong electrical tingling sensation in our bodies as well.
I'm sorry, I need to take a short break just to remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell, and we're speaking with researcher and author Kathleen Martin. And let's see, we're talking about these other dimensionals. This has always been a question that I ask my guests quite often. Do you feel that these beings are extraterrestrial, other dimensional, or a little bit of both? What do you feel from your research?
Well,
I
really don't know if they are extraterrestrial. They say they are. Kevin was able to photograph a craft up fairly close so that we could see that there was a craft there. They showed each of us their craft. Now, I was disappointed. I wanted to see a craft up close. And I had arranged for this to occur. I live on a lake. I was sitting on my deck. It was dark out. It was about 5 o'clock in the morning. And this entity came to me. I had learned how to communicate with him telepathically by relaxing, going into a fairly deep state of relaxation so that we could communicate with one another. And I was looking out on the lake expecting to see a craft, and I wanted to see one up close.
Mm-hmm.
What I saw instead was about a 30-foot circle of turbulence on my lake that I had never seen before. I had seen a duck paddling that caused a circle, but this circle was nothing like a duck paddling on the lake. And I thought, gee, is a craft going to rise up out of the water? What is happening here? It never became visible to me. All I saw was the turbulence on the lake.
Probably the craft was over the lake at that time, do you think?
I wouldn't be surprised if it was, but the extraterrestrial gray scientist that I was communicating with, allegedly a gray scientist, told me that he thought that it was his energy, that he had a very high rate of energy, and that his energy might have been causing that. So I'll never know for certain. You know, I'm skeptical, so I'm not going to say that anything is certain.
Yeah, well, you're speaking of all these ninth dimensional beings and all these different dimensions. Okay, so when you say, this is extraterrestrial in origin, kind of confusing as to why are you referring to them as dimensional?
Interdimensional, because they are interdimensional. They say that they are interdimensional extraterrestrials.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So they're both, they say.
Okay, I guess that was my question. Are they extraterrestrial, other dimensional, or a little bit of both?
Yes.
So that's pretty.
So they're both.
Extraterrestrial, yes. Coming through other dimensions. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
Yes. So I was pleased that I was able to communicate with this group in my book, Forbidden Knowledge, A Personal Journey from Alien Abduction to Spiritual Transformation. Mm-hmm. I included the transcripts of 120 of the questions that our group of nine in all asked, and the specific answers that we received from this group. So what you have is in the chapter before this is Admiral Knowles and Wilbert Smith and the communication files and the information that the extraterrestrials allegedly gave to them. Mm-hmm. And then you can compare it to several chapters with the 120 questions and all of the information about what we were able to verify scientifically and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. I can tell you, and this is another personal experience, that they said that they would protect us. And so I was happy with that. We experienced positive energy coming from them. Mm-hmm. There was nothing negative about it. But I can tell you, go ahead.
When you say protect us, protect your group or protect the human race?
Protect the members of our group.
Okay.
That they were working with.
The reason I qualify that is because a lot of experiencers slash contactees, whatever they wish to call themselves, feel that they've been told that they're here to protect mankind and to show them that we're screwing up our environment, our world, our planet, and it's also having an effect on them, not only because of we're neighbors with them on a galactic basis, but mm-hmm. also neighbors with them on a dimensional basis.
Yes, absolutely. And those messages date back into the late 40s, early 50s. Mm-hmm. They were given to Knowles and Smith, and some of those are the messages that we received as well. The major concerns are our failure to be good stewards to our environment and the possibility of an environmental collapse. The fact that they're taking genetic material from around the world, flora and fauna, in case there is a collapse of our environment.
Mm-hmm.
Their second major concern is our use of nuclear weapons. They say that our technological development is out of balance with our spiritual growth. And when this occurs, it places a planet at risk. They say that they are here to, in this quadrant of our galaxy, as protectors.
Mm.
So they have given this message to us, and that's, you know, just three or four of 120. But these messages date back probably 70 years.
Mm-hmm.
So at least. This is something that I hope that people will listen to. Would like for us to grow spiritually, to become less barbaric for the sake of our planet.
Really?
In fact, back in 1954, they offered their technology, medical and other technology, to our government and to other governments around the world. The condition was that no one would receive all of it, that every country in the world would be given a little piece of it, and we all had to cooperate together in order to have the medical knowledge to heal, or the technological knowledge in order to protect our environment, or whatever else that they were willing to give us.
You see that happening? Course,
pardon me?
You see that happening?
No.
In the near future?
I don't see that happening in the near future either, unfortunately.
No.
And that's, I hope for it. I ask people to project love into the collective consciousness of our planet. Our planet's collective consciousness has a lot of hatred, a lot of fear right now. And when you have that overriding sense of hatred and fear, and also mourning because of the pandemic, it causes greater problems among humans.
So
some of this may sound a little bit new agey, but it's scientifically verified using plants, where and even cancer cells. You can take two plants and you can put them in the same home or the same laboratory. You can expose one of those to hateful, loud music, and it will die. And you can expose the other one to loving thoughts and classical music, and it will grow and flourish. I've tried these experiments myself.
I was going to say that those experiments were tried back actually when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a long time ago.
Yes, it was. It was a long time ago.
Yeah.
But anyone can try that, and you can see that it does work. I've done it with the little animals in my yard, and with the cattle in a pasture down the street from me, and with the sandhill cranes, and it works. They will bring their babies to show me if I am projecting love toward them. I had to learn to throw it outside of my body to project it, but it does work.
And they have hooked sensors up to the leaves of plants and threaten to, come at it with a pair of scissors, and they were going to cut that off. And it was like a lie detector machine, and it would affect it. It would affect
yes.
it. That plant was showing fear
mm-hmm.
because it thought it was going to be killed. And that's just amazing. So
yes, and you can kill cancer cells through thought in a petri dish.
Yeah.
Or they can flourish through negative thought.
Right.
There was an experiment that was done in Southeast Asia, I believe it was, with a group of students. And there was a great deal of concern about war in that country. And the students spent the day meditating on peace. And the war ended up stopping.
Mm-hmm.
You can do this to reduce the amount of crime that's committed in any city, for example, through human thought. So it's pretty amazing. I was aware of some of this, but also taught this by the Council of Eight.
And that goes right back to the power of prayer.
Absolutely.
That's exactly what prayer is. I don't care if you're Christian, Muslim, Jewish, whatever. Prayer is prayer, And even if you're an atheist, those thoughts going out, well, you've just said it. I'm just echoing what you've just said. Those thoughts going out can have real life consequences.
And they absolutely can. And it's just amazing what we can do with our thoughts.
And when you were last on this show, you told us that contactees have contracts with otherworldly beings, and they did so in a previous lifetime. And can you address that subject for our listeners?
Yes, that was forwarded by the late Dolores Cannon, who hypnotized individuals for the Mutual UFO Network. She was a well-known hypnotist and developed the quantum healing hypnosis technique over a period of about 40 years. Very well known around the world. And through the hypnosis sessions that she did, she learned from the experiencers that they, in their past life, had contact with these extraterrestrials. Some of them were extraterrestrials in a past life, and that they had made a contract to come into the Earth in this lifetime and to be taken to craft by these extraterrestrials in order to attempt to save our planet. That's what it was all about.
Do you recall having a contract before you came into this existence?
I'm trying to remember that. I don't think that I've been hypnotized regarding that, and I have no conscious recall of making a contract. I have been told by the ETs that I am a communicator of information between them and humanity, that's my job. Mm-hmm. No, I probably do have a contract, but I certainly don't remember having one.
But you have been you are a what do you call yourself?
An experiencer?
Experiencer, contactee?
Yes, I am an experiencer, and I, through testing, learned that I have the characteristics of an abductee. Okay. So in our MUFON experiencer research team's study of 516 experiencers, where Dr. Don C. Dondari from McGill University, psychology professor, who is now retired, administered the American Personality Inventory to determine if a person had the characteristics of an abductee by having UFO abduction syndrome. Mm-hmm. I wasn't part of because the study we did, but I did take the test. And yes, I'm very close to the center of having all of the characteristics of an abductee.
Very good. And last we talked, you helped us differentiate between extraterrestrials, angels and demons, and hauntings by discarnate entities. Remind some of our listeners who might be plagued with the paranormal how to determine exactly what they might be dealing with.
Yes, I do want to say that there is a paranormal overlay in abductees and experiencers in general. So about 60% have some paranormal activity in their homes. They might have conscious orbs in their homes that they will see time and time again, which I suspect is only a physical entity at the borderline of the veil between the dimensions. Mm-hmm. Also, they have the sensation that something unseen is walking on the bed. That is in 75% of our abductee group. Pretty high percentage. And then at a much lower percentage, some poltergeist activity, but that's not as common, 25 to 30%. So you do have that. But there are many people who have contacted me personally and also the MUFON's experiencer, it's now resource team, and they are being haunted by these negative paranormal sort of entities. They think that they're extraterrestrials. And I ended up devising a plan to help people with that. Now, you can go to my website and read two articles about it. But the key to getting rid of this is these are lower vibrating entities. And so what you have to do is raise your vibrational frequency. You can go to YouTube. And on YouTube, you will find guided meditations to raise your consciousness or to raise your vibrational frequency. There are also tones that are played during this to help to raise the human vibrational frequency. And while you're doing this in meditation, you're going to have more positive feelings, more loving feelings that you can take out to your environment. And you can do a self-hypnosis where you can give yourself key words so that if these entities come into your environment, instead of going into a fight or flight response, you can project love in their direction. Now, if they're loving entities, they're going to continue a friendly relationship with you if you want them to, or you can tell them, you know, to go away. But if they are the negative ones who are there because they want to attach to you, or they're feeding off your fear, loathing, or pain, then if you raise that vibration, they will not have an interest in you because they're not interested in your love toward them. So just very briefly, that's the way that we can get rid of these things. I had a very unfortunate experience with an I see that your hand is raised.
Well, I just wanted to take a moment to once again, for the last time, remind our listeners that you're listening to WHFR.FM, Station Making Waves, and you're listening to We Are Not Alone. I'm David Twitchell. We're speaking with, contactee.
Kathleen Martin.
I was going to say contactee, researcher, and author, Kathleen Martin. No, I didn't forget your name.
Okay. So what I was saying is I'm a person who looks for answers. I don't care about scientific respectability by mainstream scientists, but what I do is scientifically respectable. Mm-hmm. So I was doing an investigation. I was working with an experiencer, and this individual was telling me about his memories of being taken by these draconian reptilians to tunnels underneath the ground, the earth, and that humans were there and horrific things were being done to humans and to him as well. Mm-hmm. And one time he gave me specific details of something that caused me to experience terror. Mm-hmm. My vibrational frequency dropped at that moment. And this, he had an attachment, I found out, because that lower vibrating attachment came and attached to me. And it was immediate. It was as if a black cloud descended on the top of me. I felt tingling leave my body, stream out of my body. And this was with me. I stopped sleeping as well as I had. I usually have no problem falling asleep or sleeping through the night. I started to develop problems. My body started to hurt. I did everything I could. I used religion. I'm Catholic. I have a crucifix on one wall, another one next to my bed. I used crystals. I used holy water, holy oil. I had my house cleansed. But I could not get rid of this entity. And he was irritating me. And he grew. And finally, he grew to the point where he talked to me. And he said, you know, you're going to die soon. Why don't you just do it? He wanted to steal my soul, I'm convinced. And so I have a friend, Dr. Melanie Barton Bragg, not only is a psychotherapist, but she's also an ordained minister who can remove these attachments. And so she lives 3 hours away from me. I called her. She tried to remove it over the phone. She could not. So she was going to drive to my home. But after it told me that I was supposed to kill myself, I said, I'm not going to deal with this any longer. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to call Kevin Briggs. And I did. And I said, Kevin, the Council of Eight said that they would protect me. But this has happened to me. I'm certain that I have an attachment. And I would like to ask that attachment would be removed. Mm-hmm. So he said he would contact the ninth dimensional. And it was immediately removed.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. I was so relieved over that. You don't want to have one of these attachments. They're not nice at all.
I'd be interested in getting this Kevin Briggs on our show after we're done with our little talk. Maybe you can give me his information or give him my information, and maybe we can get together. What do you think?
Certainly, I'll introduce the two of you.
Oh, that would be wonderful.
That sounds great. So they gave us scientific information too. They told us. Or Zark, who was the little gray that I communicated with, gave us information on what the craft looks like, this particular one that they're on, the propulsion system for the craft, the fuel that they use, and the way that it works. That's all in Forbidden Knowledge, plus other information about what is a vibrational frequency? Well, it's only the frequency at which the electron in the atom vibrates. So it just is vibrating at a higher frequency.
Right.
And this is the reason that we cannot see them. But once we elevate our frequency to their level, we will be able to see them as being solid.
Okay.
So pretty interesting result of something else that they have done for me is that I can feel a strong tingling sensation at the top of my head, the crown chakra. Mm-hmm. And when I'm speaking with experiencers, if they say something to me that the ETs are telling me is correct, that my crown chakra will tingle. So
you've got your own ET lie detector.
I do. I really do, and it's pretty amazing to have that ability. They've given me abilities that I didn't have previously.
Very good. And you've also updated the book Captured, which you had co-authored with Stan Friedman. So what is the new info included in that?
Well, I have never stopped looking for scientists who would be willing to evaluate the evidence in a laboratory. And so there is an update on the star map. And this used almost 3,000 possible models.
Mm-hmm.
And all of the details are in the book, but I can tell you that Marjorie Fish's identification of Betty's star map is still the one model that works best out of all of those computer-generated models that was examined by an astrophysicist. Mm-hmm. We've found new scientific evidence on Betty's dress. New DNA evidence, and you can read about that. And also rare and expensive metallic substances, the high melting point on her dress as well. Where did they come from? They shouldn't be there. So it's all in the 60th anniversary edition of Captured, which is updated.
I remember when you were talking about, he should have, who were you talking about that had so much information that they shouldn't have had that kind of scientific information?
Oh, I was talking about Rear Admiral Herbert Knowles and Wilbert Smith, and that they were attempting to scientifically verify information that this group of alleged extraterrestrials were giving to them, and that Wilbert Smith was actually able to verify the changes scientifically that this group said that they were making in our magnetic fault lines. They said that there was a weakness in our magnetic fault lines, particularly in areas where nuclear weapons were detonated.
And that kind of, I was going to say, that kind of reminded me of Betty Hill's star map. She shouldn't have had that kind of information about our galaxy, our universe. And, you know, she had no astronomy background, and yet she made this star map under hypnosis that proved to be, ultimately, in years to come, proved to be accurate. And where did she get that information from?
Well, I know. She was on the craft, and under hypnosis, she revealed that she said to the one that she called the leader, "I know you're not from around here. Where's your home port?" And so he produced this sort of three-dimensional star map that he sort of like unrolled, but it was more like a holographic image, three-dimensional, nothing that we had on our planet and in that time frame, and still don't. Mm-hmm. So it showed various stars that were connected, some by five solid lines, the two in the foreground that were as large as quarters, and then one or two lines were going to others that were smaller. And Marjorie initially thought that she would find many matches for that. She started going to the university in Ohio, to the astronomy department. She couldn't check out the astronomical catalogs, but she sat and she copied all of the characteristics of the nearby stars in our local galactic neighborhood out 54 light years from our sun. Mm-hmm. And all of the characteristics of these stars, the distance data, you know, everything. And she looked for several years to identify the stars on Betty's map. She couldn't find a match. But then we made technological progress and we had better distance data. And once that occurred, she was able to identify the stars on Betty's map. And they had special characteristics. All of the stars on Betty's star map are sun-like stars, although only 5% of the stars in our local galactic neighborhood out 54 light years are sun-like. And all of the sun-like stars in that volume of space on Betty's map are on Betty's map. So that's pretty extraordinary. And one of the astronomers who vetted Marjorie's work said that if we were astronauts living on a planet around Zeta Reticuli, those were the two stars in the foreground, the two where these extraterrestrials came from, the origination point, he said that our astronauts would follow the same routes, nearest star to nearest star, because they're all in a plane which makes traveling from one to the other easier and more logical. So, pretty extraordinary.
How would Betty Hill have known that? She worked in a post office, didn't she?
No, that was Barney. She was a social worker for the state of New Hampshire.
Barney was yes. the post office.
Yes, so, but she had never taken a course in astronomy, so she knew nothing about it.
Now, how could she have possibly known that? And that's what reminded me when you said something about how could he have possibly had that information, that scientific information. I thought, that sounds just like Betty Hill's situation.
You know? Yeah, it's pretty remarkable that, about Betty's star map and the fact that scientists here on Earth didn't even have that information in 1961 or in 1964 when Betty underwent hypnosis.
Right, right. So, and then when did they finally discover that Betty Hill's map was right?
Well, that was in late 1971. Marjorie finished her work in 1972. Mm-hmm. She had built 14 models of our local galactic neighborhood out 54 light years.
Mm-hmm. What will be your the subject of your presentation at the symposium, the MUFON symposium?
Well, I have been asked to do a presentation on Betty and Barney Hill, documented evidence, the media spin, and I will be talking about comparing what the media has stated then and now, and what the evidence is for that, and how certain individuals have entered a great deal of disinformation mm-hmm. into the mix.
We only have like a minute, but the recent admission by the U.S. Powers that be, even in Congress, do you take this by the Pentagon and then the Navy? Do you take this as official disclosure?
I think of it as a very slow, light disclosure. I'm pleased that they are doing this. I hope that they don't decide to cover this up again as they did back in the 40s and 50s and really a lot of it during the scientific study on UFOs by Edward Condon. Of course, the information in the book is scientific, but his statements to the National Academy of Sciences were that we could not expect intelligent life from elsewhere to come into our solar system in the next 10,000 years. Yeah. So that was sort of dismissed. But so I hope that they are going to be serious, that they're going to give us information. I'm very pleased that people like former director of the DIA, James Lukatsky, and Lou Elizondo from ATIP, and Colm Kelleher, biochemist for the government, very intelligent insiders in the government, Jim Semovin from the CIA, are stepping forward and giving us the information that they have been able to acquire in their investigations and also what has been released through the Freedom of Information Act.
Okay. And where can our listeners go to find out more about your work, Kathleen?
Go to www.kathleen.com. It's all there where I will be speaking. You can order any of my books. You'll get autographed copies via PayPal and read free articles as well.
Uh-huh. Well, this is what, the second time or the third time I've spoken to you? I think the second time. But I have really enjoyed it. I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Hopefully we can do this again.
It was a pleasure speaking with you again. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathleen.
And I want to thank you, the loyal listener. Go to WHFR's homepage and scroll down to We Are Not Alone and click on the headline, which will take you to where you can find my website with all the archived shows. Please join me the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. when we will again explore the mysteries of the UAP phenomenon. Until then, this is David Twitchell reminding you to keep an eye on the sky.